Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. DA got that dope.
You already know my protocol.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Fantasy CBB Super Show. I am your host, Walter Waddell, a.k.a. Dub Deuces 85. We are, of course, brought to you in part slash full by RotoCurve. You can see our content at rotocurve.com. We offer baseball, football, basketball, all that good stuff. You can get my content at rotocurve.com/college-basketball. We are doing $10 for weekly packages right now and $20 for monthly packages. All kinds of good stuff going on. We're going to talk a little bit about today's slate, some of the teams that did us well and did us wrong. We like to recap as we do. And then also, of course, go over the slates for FanDuel tomorrow and DraftKings. DraftKings has a 7-game slate and FanDuel has 4. And they were able to get 9 total games between them, despite not being anywhere near the same amount of games. So we will dig in, as always. For those of you listening live, we appreciate it. I know it's late for some of you guys on the East Coast. We'll still have the on-demand option here on Blog Talk until we move over to a different platform. We'll be joined here at some point by Razzle, and we may have another special guest. If you want to call in, you're listening live, 515-602-9782 is the number to call. So let's dig in right now, right quick. I want to talk about the slate that we just had. Looks like ET Phone Home is back. Took a little bit of, you know what, took him like 3 weeks. This is week 3 now. Took him 3 weeks to get his mass multi entries going, and he had a hell of a day. Looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in the top 10 belong to ET. You got to give it up to the guy. He was able to avoid on his best team. Petrosaf, he made that swap to Tilly. That was a big one that happened tonight. Killian Tilly, nobody really expected him to play for the next several weeks after that knee surgery, but you know what? He came back and he played well. Hit 28.5 fantasy points on DraftKings, 15-8 and assists to steal and 1 3-pointer. Now, it was really critical to make a swap, and you had a decision to make. Drew Timm was the play that I was personally on, and I know a lot of others were. Tilly was 4-8, so my main concern was, you know, how many minutes is Tilly going to play? But I suppose if he's ready and good to go, they're going to play him a full slot of minutes, which they ended up playing him, you know, 20-plus. So I ended up swapping to Tilly on some, and then Jonah Matthews on my main team, which he got within 3 points of Tilly, so that was okay. And, of course, it was the right move because Tim only had, what, 15 or 16? So that's the good thing about DraftKings. Unfortunately, some people don't have that luxury to be around for news all the time. And, you know, you're really at a disadvantage if you don't. Now, the play today would have been to combine Okongwu and Rakusevic. Rak had 42.25. Onyeka had 48.25. So if you would have paired those guys, avoided like a Petrosev, you would have really had a nice night. And then Admon Gilder, who was the guy that I was looking at last night, he ended up being the pivot over Javonte Smart, who was much more chalkier of an option. Now, Smart only played 22 minutes tonight. He would have got there. I'm fairly confident he would have got value tonight, but he sat at the 13-minute mark. He sat, Tyler May sat, and Emmett Williams all sat. They played Trenton Watford. Darius Day stayed on the floor. He got his double-double, which is nice. We appreciate that. Yes, we rostered him. And then Watford checked in, and I thought he was going to play until he got his double-double, which he was taking forever to get it. But he was scoring and getting steals and doing other things, which is nice, but he ended up playing the rest of the game. And then, of course, the secondary LSU players did well, too, because they played that entire half. So that was frustrating because, for me, when it comes to blowouts, I don't necessarily worry about that type of thing. I mean, just with the Michigan State Spartans the other day, they were up by 50, and Cassius Winston and Xavier Tillman were still on the floor playing. So there's not really a one-size-fits-all when it comes to blowouts. We have some blowouts that's going to be happening tomorrow, you know, namely with the North Carolina-Elon game. That's a big one. In Memphis versus Little Rock tomorrow on FanDuel. But again, I don't think we should be worrying necessarily about blowouts in terms of, you know, should I roster this guy or should I fade him in terms of that. So just one of those things. Also, was an amazing play today. He was a core play for me. You know, he's highly owned, of course, 50% in cash. Put up 56.5, had 38 real points, 6 triples, 3 steals, 3 assists, 6 rebounds. Fantastic play. There was really no reason not to roster him. He was a 9K player last year, coming in at 7-2 today. Easy lock and load. Ethan Anderson was the value guy that we had. He ended up with 18.5 at 4-7, so he was fine. Yeah, Petrusev was bad. Smart was bad. You know, of course, I probably set myself up tweeting about how he was the play. But again, he only played the 22 minutes, so I can't necessarily say that was a loss. Other than that, who else? Let's see, who stuck out? I think 920. Let's put them through on the lines. Eric?
Hey, what's up?
What's up, man?
So talking about tonight's slate, who was a surprise to you, and who kind of? I mean, you said you wanted to complain a little bit about LSU. I'm guessing because the guy sat for so long.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that they just never came back in the game except for Watford, right? Like, you know, he was a starter, but he's the only starter that's basically running until the end of the game and padding his stats at the end. You know, and not seeing Emmett Williams come back out at all, because he could approach the double-double. Smart just did nothing in the second half because he didn't have to. I mean, not that Smart made a big difference, because even in the main $12 on DK, he's 64% owned. So that kind of shows you where everybody was at. But yeah, I didn't like watching them sit for that long. I mean, I get it, because the bench was actually increasing the lead, so... But, yeah, it's still annoying.
Yeah. And then Anthony Lamb, he really did well today. You know, someone on Twitter, one of the independent CBB writers, he had posted a couple of games saying which one would be an upset. And I actually thought that Vermont may have a chance, because if Lamb could get going, he scored 30 real points tonight, you know, if one of the Duncans could help him as well, that they would have the offense to beat Virginia, because Virginia hasn't really shown us yet that they can score. That's a good win for, I think Vermont will be a tournament team. So did you have any Lamb shares tonight?
Very few. I think I had a couple on FanDuel and probably only one on DK. I know what his upside is, but that Virginia defense is, you know, a real thing. So I try not to pay up. And actually, he wouldn't have even been the best play on Vermont value-wise. Steph Smith actually went off for, I don't know what his price was, $4,300 on DK?
Yeah, no, that's... I wonder if we're going to be able, because, I mean, those guys were kind of more on the wing, but it'll be interesting to see if we can attack Virginia with interior guys again this year like last year. Jay Huff got into the starting lineup tonight because the stat man, who is not really the stat man, as we've been joking, was sick. So I don't know if Huff's going to continue to start or be off the bench, but it looks like he's much more comfortable coming off the bench because he can beat up on units, because he didn't look so good today. Were you surprised that, you know, he got inserted in the starting lineup? Because just the other day we were talking, and you were wondering, I think, you know, why isn't he starting? He got his chance. Do you think it was just kind of, you know, Vermont's a tougher opponent, or you know, what was the deal with that?
I guess what I noticed is Vermont started Daniel Giddens, you know, who's a transfer from the SEC, so he's a big – mm-hmm. Big-bodied guy, so I don't know if that had something to do with it. Obviously, don't know the timeline of things on how they decided to go with their starting lineup, but you know, it could have easily just been that Tony Bennett saw that's who they were starting down low, and they could match him up with Huff. I didn't really think Huff was going to play a ton of minutes, because I thought, you know, as we see, a lot of teams tend to go with smaller lineups, especially when their opponent kind of goes that route. So I don't know. I think I do like him better coming off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Statman coming back, I think that will probably be his normal role, which I like him in. But with the way the DK pricing is so aggressively, you know, jacking guys' prices up, it wasn't even a price I was comfortable paying for him anyways. And with Petrusev today, I didn't, even without the thought of Tilly playing, I didn't really want to play him today, but there, you know, we just didn't have a lot of other options at that range. I never really considered playing Onyeka and Rack together, which I wish I would have. But normally with Petrosev, like next time, next fade, if you know, Tilly playing and he's over 7K, that's going to be an easy fade. So, you know, it's one of those things where these guys are, you know, normally they would have been in the 5K range and we'd be fine playing them, but yeah, I don't think we can play Huff really over 7K normally, unless it's a cupcake team. All right, is there anything else you want to talk about this slate before we dig into tomorrow, which looks pretty nice on DraftKings, FanDuel?
No, I guess. No, I'm trying to get over the whole evening now at this point.
All right, so Georgia Tech versus Georgia's first game on the slate. Both sides do have this game. Ken Palm has it 73-70 in favor of Georgia. Georgia 50th in tempo ranking, 103 for Georgia Tech. It sounds like Alvarado is going to be questionable, or he is right now. I don't know if he's actually going to play. He did miss the game against Elon. If he misses again, that means Bubba Parham will probably start again. He did start last game. Played 28 minutes. He was okay. He had 5.6 rebounds, one steal, three turnovers, and was in foul trouble. I really think that he's going to end up being a really good, solid piece for them. I mean, we know when he was at VMI, he was scoring at will, and that his role was going to be different. I hope that he does pan out. Obviously, I have him in Dynasty, so that'd be nice. But if Alvarado misses, I am slightly interested in him. Devo, of course, he had 30% usage rate last game without Alvarado. He had 22 points, one rebound, two assists. That's a little concerning that he didn't have any peripherals to speak of except six turnovers. But he was 3-for-4 from long range and 4-for-7 inside the arc. So he was making all of his shots. And James Banks, of course, had six blocks in that game. So this is going to be an interesting one. You know, Banks matches up with the stud freshman in Georgia in Anthony Edwards. Rayshon Hammonds, I don't know if you've seen the season that he's been having so far. He's just been absolutely crushing it. So there's a couple of nice pieces in this game. Price-wise, when we're looking at Georgia Tech, Devo's at 6'7". You know, I don't know that without, you know, him being able to put up some other stats besides scoring that we can really pay that. Banks at 9'4" is holy shit. You know, I love James Banks, but I sure was a lot more fun last year playing him at 4'5", than 9'4". So this is a good example of DraftKings, especially having super aggressive pricing. I realize he put up 53 against NC State, but I don't know that he needs to be 9-4. So I don't know if I'll be using him. Khalid Moore was a guy, I think, earlier in the season, a week or two when we did a show, that you said you would like. He's been doing good. He's 8K. Parham is 6-4. So even with him, that's not that great of a price. Like, I would expect him to be more in the, like, you know, if this is last year's DK pricing, he'd probably be like 4-7, and we'd be talking a lot differently right now. So the Georgia Tech guys, while this is a nice pace boost for them, and they're already a pretty fast team, and you know, they want to play faster this year, I don't know that any of them really excite me. Edwards is 9-2. That's a little puzzling for that price. You know, yes, against Citadel he had 47. Then the game before after that he had 24. It's just I can't – every time I think I have the DK pricing algo figured out, I don't. So I don't know that we can use him either, even though he's a nice player. I think for 400 less, I'd personally rather go to, you know, someone like Hammonds. Hammonds and Banks will probably be matched up now that I look at it. Hammonds has been just going nuts this year. What do you think that, you know, happened? He was decent last year, but he's like a super stud all of a sudden. Granted, competition hasn't been great, but 7-12, 10-9-4, and then last game 26-14. What do you think? What do you think he's, you know, kind of gotten into him so far?
I'm not really sure. I mean, the big thing is, right, there's a lot more rebounds. They don't have Claxton down low now.
Yep.
And Claxton was just a massive rebounder, right? And then also just a massive shot blocker as well. You know, because last year, Hammonds actually had more usage than he has right now. But it's his rebounding numbers and shot blocking numbers that have gone up. And then his turnover rate is way down as well. He's also not committing a ton of fouls yet. He's kind of cut that rate in half too. So, I mean, maybe all it took was just he kind of gets the paint to himself at times. instead of having to share it. Because I assume he probably was playing the four spot a little more last year with Claxton in the five. And now it looks like he's playing like 64% of the minutes at the five. So I think it could just be something that simple. And then obviously just a summer of working out and getting in better shape. I mean, I don't think he's going to keep it up, but it's been pretty impressive so far.
Yeah, and it's super early, but look at it. Like right now, last year his fouls called per 40 was 5.3. He was a guy that would get in foul trouble. Right now it's 2.5. Again, very few games to go on. Defensive rebounding rates up to 34% from 18 last year. So, yeah, I think that you're right. Without Claxton, he's definitely the guy down low. And then Edwards is kind of like he can play a 1-4 type of spot, and he's able to, because of that, kind of clear out and let maybe Hammonds work down low and get rebounds and whatnot. So are you interested in playing him at that price right now or against Georgia Tech? Are you kind of not? Because they really haven't played anyone yet. It's the problem.
Yeah, I have a feeling I'm not going to play too much of him. I just kind of want to see it more. Because in this game, he's going to have a lot to deal with for rebounds, right? With Banks, obviously, Moses Wright, Khalid Moore, all rebounding guys, and even Evan Cole when he comes off the bench. It's still 6'10". I don't know. I mean, it's the same thinking for Banks, right? Like, Banks needs to grab a ton of rebounds to be able to pay off that price point and probably block a bunch of shots as well. So I'd have to look into if Hammonds is at least getting any of his shots blocked or anything, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to fade the top-end price points in this game.
I would agree there. And even seeing like Tyree Crump at 6'3", who was a guy that was cheaper last year, and 4 or 5, and it seemed like, hey, let's use Crump. And with Georgia, it was always a joke that the guards were rotating, but they don't have Harris right now, so Wheeler and Crump kind of have to play. Wheeler's the freshman, guy that came in with Edwards that's doing well. So there's a lot of interesting plays in this game, but I think overall by the masses, or the regulars, I should say, will mostly get avoided. Now, if Alvarado misses, do you think you want more pieces of Georgia Tech because that's a lot of usage to go around, or the price is pretty correct on these guys like Debo and Parham?
I think the prices generally are a little high. Obviously Parham's up there for some. I mean, he's, 4,800 on FanDuel, where I probably have interest in him. But there's no way I'm playing Khalid Moore at 8K, right? I mean, I liked him to start the season against NC State when he was 4,800. So he's come up 3,200. That's a bit insane, especially because a lot of his value has, been in 9 steals and a block so far. Really, I think, if Alvarado's out, I might, be interested in Asante Price. He played 21 minutes in the last game without him. Did a lot of rebounding, but he's cheap enough. And then Moses Wright is probably the only guy I'm going to consider at 5,700. Seems cheap enough, rebounder and shot blocker. So I think that's about it for me in this game. I mean, I don't know. Is there somebody sneaky for you that you like, or?
No, not really. On DraftKings, I'm not a big fan of it. But on FanDuel, I've been doing this kind of – I look for guys who are decent players that are had maybe a string of bad games that they haven't done well yet and are priced under 5K. And like Nico Mannion the other day on FanDuel was 4.8 or 4.6, somewhere in there. And that was an auto lock to me. There's been other examples, but that's been my strategy. So the only guy I think really, on FanDuel, Moses Wright at 5.2 is nice too, but Parham there at 4.8 on FanDuel is interesting to me, especially if Alvarado is out, because I would expect Parham to play closer to 30 minutes. I don't think he's going to get into that kind of foul trouble again like he did last time. So that's kind of where I'm looking there. But DraftKings, no. I have a certain plan in mind already, especially with more games available on DraftKings. that I don't know that I'll be really dipping into this game too much for my main lineup. And if that's kind of the sense I get from everyone else, then maybe I will, for obviously for tournaments, get exposure. But early on, I've already started talking to people, and it doesn't sound like this is a game that people want a ton of, but it does have a lot of intrigue because it's a, you know, it's a decent score, 73-70, close, and there is an opportunity for potential, you know, overtime, and it's going to be a faster-paced game. So I feel like we need to have some exposure to it, but, you know, with the way the pricing is all out of whack a little bit right now, I don't see anybody that, you know, we can jump all over. Next game, Princeton versus Indiana. Princeton over 79-60 for Indiana. They're 155th tempo ranking. Princeton 263rd. Princeton's always slow. Now, Indiana last game had some ridiculous scoring. Justin Smith went for 40 at 6-2. In 22 minutes against Troy, he had 22 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, a block, and 3 steals. So, you know, and he was coming off a game where he had 7. He's already had a game this year of 42 and 27. So he's got a wide range of outcomes up and down. And then Trace Jackson Davis, who I should mention, Rob, was claiming would be, you know, he saw him in high school because he has a family member that plays baseball and also played basketball in his district, and he saw him play. And I guess he didn't look good, and he was predicting him to be a major bust. So far, he's been killing it, but these are easier teams. So I'll reserve judgment there, but I did want to mention that the cool Rob had said he would not be good this year, and he's looked very good. Princeton should not be a difficult matchup for them. Rob Finnessy is questionable heading into this one. They did get Devontae Green back last game, so he's interesting at 4-8 on DraftKings. He played 20 minutes against Troy. A lot of people didn't even know he was back. I don't think it was announced really, you know, too widely known, but he did play those 20 minutes, had 6 points, four assists, I should say, 2 steals, 2 fouls for 16 fantasy points. So at 4-8, he's somebody that I would be probably interested in. You know, you got guys like Race Thompson that people were on last time. You know, Al Durham is a decent play at 6-2, even though that's a little higher than I really want to pay for him. I like him better at like 5-5, 5-5. But these are all guys who I think will play, you know, roughly 25 to 30 minutes. Justin Smith is a guy that I have trouble with, because when I do use him, we all have those guys. When I do use him, he's going to get me like 15 to 16 in foul trouble. But if I fade, then that's when he's popping his 30 and 40s. Indiana seems very deep this year. You know, I don't have a ton of games for them to go off of. They've played all of, what, 4 games? And a few of them, most of them have been blowouts. So it's hard to gauge what their real rotation is going to be. But so far, they've been playing, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, almost 9 guys, 15 or more minutes pretty consistently. And that may be just because of the blowout. So when you're looking at, you know, I don't know if he's prepared projections or whatever you do, but when you're looking at numbers, it's going to be kind of wonky because you're going to see all these guys and they're going to be projected for 20 to 25 minutes, when that's probably not really what it's going to be like when they get into closer games. I would expect, you know, Jackson Davis to play 30 minutes, Durham to play 32 minutes. And then with Green back, that might throw guys like Franklin, you know, their minutes down. So I don't really know how to attack them because, again, this should be a blowout, and the prices on the best Indiana plays are all high. So I think Devontae Green is the guy that I'm looking at mostly, and that's probably it. We'll get into Princeton side here in a second, but what are you kind of on the same wavelength there for Indiana, or how are you feeling about them?
Yeah, pretty much. I think I might have a little bit of interest in Durham if Fantasy's out. But yeah, I don't, you know, the gigantic price tag on Jackson Davis. Well, I am intrigued by him. I can't go there, I don't think. And I mean, I will have a share or two of Smith somewhere, just because he does have upside, but he's definitely not going to make any of my main lineups at all.
And for Princeton, Jalen Llewellyn, this is the kind of their study. He has a 35% shot rate right now and a 30% usage rate. You see his 7K on DraftKings. He is an okay play, but he hasn't, against Duquesne, he only had 21 fantasy points. He is a guy that has shown, you know, in the past, ability to break a 40 fantasy point game, which he did that against San Fran. But, just that price to me doesn't scream like I need to play. Ordinarily, if I see a mid-major high-usage player, that's another thing I've been doing on DraftKings a lot that I think will be low-owned. you know, been attacking them, like a Preston from Ohio or a Daly from St. Joe's. But I don't get that sense with Llewellyn that he's going to be a guy that, you know, breaks the slate open for a 40 or 50. So I do like the price on him, but I'm probably not going to have a ton of him. Richmond Araguza is the other guy at 7K that's been doing well for them. You look at his efficiency numbers, you know, 26% usage rate, has a combined rebounding rate of 28%. I guess to the free throw line at a very high rate too, and a lot of easy buckets, as he has a 64% shooting range inside the arc. So those are their two guys. Princeton isn't a team that you typically are going to want to attack too often. They play that slow, methodical type of basketball. That's what they've done forever. So I don't see anyone here that I really feel like, but this could be a Razzle special or two in here at the 4K range or something. Is there anybody on Princeton that you're looking at right now?
Right now, not really. Maybe Freiburg at 5,800. I mean, just because he takes double-digit shots, and he also does some rebounding. So, you know, he's most likely not going to kill me if I use him any struggles against Indiana. But, yeah, it's such a huge usage drop on Princeton, right, especially after Llewellyn and whatever the other dude's name is. I can't even pronounce it right now, but you know, when those two are combined to take, what, 58, almost 59% of the shots when they're on the floor, yeah, it's just not a lot to like. I mean, at least Freiburg is playing a ton of minutes, and he is their best three-point shooter, for what that's worth. I mean, I don't know what Indiana's done defensively against three, so, but they also haven't played anybody either, so. Probably another spot that I'm probably going to just skip over.
And continuing with the Ivy League flavor of the slate, Columbia versus St. John's. Ken Palm has it 76-68 in favor of St. John's, so a little closer for this game. St. John's 29th in Temple ranking, Columbia 134, so this should be a relatively fast game. I know we got some St. John's fans that listen to us, RS especially. They did, the last game they were on the slate on FanDuel was against Vermont. That was a very good slate for me. Racheen Dunn came back. He is priced at 4.8 on DraftKings, played 27 minutes as he got his waiver. They were fighting for it. They got it. He's a very good player. He did have 18.5 fantasy points, which I know isn't going to, you know, get you super excited at 4.8, but keep in mind that he hadn't played for a while. I do think that he's going to continue to come off the bench, but he should see heavier minutes between 25 and 30 off the bench. He's kind of they're projected to be their super sub, is what I've read. And I really like him as a play. I don't know as I go through the slate that he'll end up in my main team, but right now I feel pretty good about him. He did take 12 shots, 6 of them three-pointers, only made one, but as he works out the rust, he's going to be a high-volume shooter, I believe. In his previous stops, he was a pretty high scorer as well. So he's somebody that I'm looking at. If you want to go LJ Figueroa at 8-6, I certainly wouldn't tell you no. He is kind of a do everything type of guy. Double-digit shots every game, takes almost double-digit threes, but a high rebounder, averages 7 rebounds a game. Fouls a little bit, but you can generally count on at least as a floor 30 fantasy points from him, which at 8-6 isn't the greatest, but also not going to murder you. So that's pretty nice if you can get those raw points and guarantee them. You guys remember him from last year. Mustafa Aaron is back as well. Priced at 7-1 on DraftKings, though, and he hasn't looked that good to me. The first two games of the season he did, I watched a lot of that Vermont game on ESPN+. He just didn't look aggressive to me at all. I know he got to the foul line 11 times, made 7 of them, but it wasn't really because of his driving. He was just kind of fell into those free throws. Now, I expected more of him. I don't think I'll play him, especially with Dunn being there as well. But there's also a little bit of emerging player with Julian Champagny, I believe I'm saying that right, who's looked really solid. He's a guy that I think is in play as well. He's averaging 8 rebounds per game and 9.5 points per game. He inserted into the starting lineup for the first time, I believe, last game. I'll double-check that right now, but I'm pretty sure that's the case against Vermont. and has looked very solid. So he's somebody, and he's looked way better than like a Nick Rutherford, who I think is gonna, he's losing minutes to Dunn, you know, as we speak. Campagne has a pretty outstanding defensive rebounding rate of 23% right now going into it, 5.5% block rate, doesn't get you in foul trouble at all, very, very, you know, aggressive freshman. So I like his game quite a bit, way better than Rutherford, in my opinion, from what the little sample that I've seen. So I definitely like him. I think he's a guy, and he has that guard forward eligibility on DraftKings, which is nice. Josh Roberts has looked very good. He's priced at 7.4, which isn't a great price, but he's been a guy who's, you know, been right around 27 to 30 fantasy points. So St. John's, I feel like, have safe floor, lower upside plays in this game. And I'm interested in, you know, obviously always Figueroa, but I think Dunn and Champagne are the two guys that I really like. Now for Columbia, it's Mike Smith, 7.3K. Now I do think, you know, where we're just talking about the Princeton guy, where I didn't think maybe he would have the, you know, the upside to break a slate. I do think in this particular matchup, the pace and the projected score, that we could see Mike Smith, you know, hit a 40-plus fantasy point game. We did just see Anthony Lamb hang 50 fantasy points on St. John's, you know, on Sunday. Granted, Lamb is a way better player than Smith, but looking at his efficiency numbers, 31% usage rate, 29% shot rate, plays 96% of the minutes, 32% assist rate, doesn't get into foul trouble, draws 5.5 fouls per 40, you know, does a little bit of everything. So he is a guy that is definitely in my sights at 7.3. I like this Columbia St. John's game, because I don't think St. John's defense is really all that good right now, and it hasn't been. So I'm not afraid to roll him out there. The other guys for Columbia that really you may want to look at, Jake Killingsworth has been playing decently. He's at 5K. And then Brumont at 5'6". Those are the two guys that have been playing, you know, heavy minutes and do have decent floors. But in that price range of that 5 to 6K, I think we can do better with our salary. You saw Brumont against Binghamton had 41 fantasy points. And against Virginia, which is impressive, had 22.5 fantasy points. So he's obviously got game at 5'6", facing a much weaker opponent defensively than when against Virginia. So I think any of those Columbia guys are fine. But I definitely have my sights set on Smith for a play in at least some tournaments, possibly more. What's your feeling of this game?
I think we have to have some sort of piece of St. John's. Because I like quite a few of their players. It's just a matter of deciding which one, who to go with or which way to go with them. This Figueroa definitely is up there in price. I do like his upside. I like Roberts quite a bit. I wish he was a little cheaper. I'm probably going to be with you on Dunn, because it looks like Rutherford played, 13 minutes in Dunn's first game. So, Rutherford's minutes were cut severely in that spot. Columbia-wise, I think any of the top four price guys, like in week A down low at 4,400, could certainly get us 20-plus. He's gone 26 in one game. He's approached 20 in the last two, so even against Virginia, he went for 19.75, and only shot 3 for 9 from the field and still got to basically 20 fantasy points. So, I kind of have the same take as you with Mike Smith, and I do kind of sneakily like Brumont as well, kind of playing the same position that Lamb does. Obviously not the same player. He's obviously not as good, but same position, can step out and shoot from the perimeter as well. So he's probably somebody I'm going to have a handful of shares of.
Yeah, and all those guys really take, you know, like the top 4 to 5 on Columbia, they all take a decent number of shots. So the offense, you know, even Killingsworth had two games of double-digit shots. Smith, of course, has had, you know, every game double digits. And then Brumont as well. So those guys are all taking enough shots that they will probably get the volume in this kind of higher pace matchup. They're getting a nice pace boost against St. John's. I think this would be a nice maybe not to the level that we got tonight from the USC Pepperdine game, where you could run four or five from that game on your main squad and do really well. But I think you could run at least two, maybe three from this game in general, maybe like a one Columbia, two St. John's kind of thing, and do pretty well. Because, you know, the first two games we talked about don't necessarily excite us that much. The next two are going to be big blowouts, it looks like, and then we've got a couple of exciting ones at the end. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with the St. John's guys. Dunn, Champagne, and then I think Figueroa and Roberts definitely deserve consideration in tournaments. And then I think you can put any of the top four Columbia guys. Now, Louisville's on the slate a little unnecessary probably, but the Ville is on the slate here against SC Upstate. Tempom has it as a projected score of 87-50 in favor of Louisville. They are 255th in Temple ranking right now. Upstate is 192. Now, I believe that our guy, young KD, a.k.a. Malik Williams, he's been practicing this week without restrictions. I saw a tweet from Mr. Jeff Goodman. So he may play, considered, I believe, day-to-day. I think if I check real quick on DraftKings, when he pulled up, he's listed as questionable, but it sounds like he has a good shot to play. He's only 4'6", Razzle. Do you think if we get a clear-cut word that he's going to play but not start, because obviously if he starts, I think you roll him, but if he doesn't start but he's going to play, do you think you would roll him out on your main team? Because obviously, I mean, exposure on your tournament, sure, but do you think he's a main play coming back at 4'6"?
If they say he's going to get, like, say 16 to 20 minutes, then yes. You know, if it's going to play just to play a handful of minutes to kind of ramp up things, then no. But I don't know that we're going to get that information either.
Yeah. No, for sure. He's a guy that was, you know, really, really quite useful last year. He will eventually slot into the, you know, it might be sooner rather than later, but he will slot into the starting lineup. That's going to make a guy like, you know, Stephen Enoch, who's been just crushing it, be a non-play for me, most likely. His price has come down from the 8K it was down to around 7.5. You know, he's basically playing like 20 to 25 minutes now without Malik, and he probably won't see a huge minutes drop, but his usage and his rebounding numbers are certainly going to go down. Right now he's averaging 12 and 10, but I don't foresee that continuing with Malik back on the court. So for me, I don't know that I'm really going to be super into him. Jordan Nora remains super priced up at 8.7. I don't know that we can pay that. He's only paid that off one time out of four games, and that's not really his fault. Right? It's just because of the blowout. The one close game they did, semi-close game, I should say, against Miami, he put up 50. So that's encouraging for when the conference play starts. But in a game where they're going to blow it out and he won't be needed, I don't think we can pay that price for him. Now, he's going to be contrarian because I think everybody's going to come, maybe not everybody, but a lot of regulars are going to come to that same opinion, I think, that Nora's not necessarily a plug-and-play like we've considered in the past. 28, 30, and 23 his last three games. That's not somebody at 8-7 that you really need to play in a blowout. Now, Darius Perry was a guy who we were surprised to see him go off. The game after his explosion, he went back to normal, what I consider normal, Darius Perry with 11 fantasy points. And then the game against NC Central, he went back up to 24, which is nice. But his price is at 5.5. I think people will use him, but personally for me, I would rather use someone like Samuel Williamson, who was $100 cheaper, and somebody that I just feel, and his game log's not any better really than Darius Perry, but I just feel better about him as a play. His fouls have been a little out of whack. He's had two games with four fouls. But I like him coming in. He's a highly rated recruit, and I think that he's going to be better than Perry as the season goes on. I guess that comes to, and Kimball was a guy that I really liked using on FanDuel the other day when he was on it because he fit that under 5K, better than that type of role. He's 4'8". I think he could probably get us, you know, right around 20 fantasy points at the 4'8". So if we're lacking value or you're not comfortable with someone like Sheen Dunn or some of the other guys that we've talked about and we haven't got to yet, you know, Lamar Kimball is definitely not somebody that you need to pass by and not consider. You know, last year for St. Joe's, he was a guy that was consistently over, 7-8K, if I remember correctly, and he still has that ability. We talked on the last time that they were on the slate that he just hasn't had to show that quite yet, but I think that any given time, he's a good play. So if he's under five, and we're not going to get guys like him at 3.7, 3.8 like the old days of DraftKings, so we're going to have to start thinking in terms of 5K in the old days, maybe not, but now I think it's more closer to what you would think 4K used, you know, what we used to get at 4K. It's just the new way of this pricing until it normalizes, or this might be how life is. So I think 4K is fine for him. So I guess that brings me to Razzle, a guy that I never get right, Dwayne Sutton, who's 6'5", again. You know, he had 12 fantasy points against Youngstown, and then Indiana State, he had 31.5 fantasy points, kind of came back out. And then he had 22 last game. Miami, 27. That's probably right around where you'll normally see him, somewhere between 20 and 25. I don't know, man. He gets his 30 minutes. He does a little bit of everything, but sometimes he just disappears. He just stands around. And I worry about him in a blowout, but the price is probably right for him in terms of any of the core Louisville plays. He's probably it. Do you feel comfortable using him, though?
I don't feel comfortable. The way his GPP scores have been, you know, on DK, like, do I think that Dwayne Sutton right now can get me, what does he need, 32.5 to go 5X even?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that he can get there right now. You know, he had to get a double-double to get to 31.5 because he only took 6 shots. I mean, the minutes are going to be there even in a blowout, right? Like, he's basically playing 30 minutes no matter what.
Yeah.
I personally think I'm just going to be on Darius Perry, even though you sound like you're not. In the blowouts is when Perry has been at his best. Now, you take the Indiana State game and realize he only played 16 minutes because he had 4 fouls. But in the other 2 blowouts around that, you know, he's been really strong assist-wise and is just playing a bunch of minutes. So, I don't know what to do with it. You know, they have, what, probably the second highest projected team total, or at least 10-pom total. I haven't dug into the Vegas information yet, but yeah, they're what, a point behind North Carolina, from what I can see. So it feels weird not having pieces, but it's one of those things where I'm starting to look at some of these early season blowouts, you know, between top level programs and these mid majors. And I'm kind of noticing that the fantasy points are just kind of being spread out amongst, like, the starting five or even the top 7 guys. Like, they just kind of share them all. It's not really one guy just going off and dominating and racking up points and then the rest of them just not doing much. It's just they're all getting their 3.5X or something. And then they don't play the last 6 or 7 minutes, so they can't really get to, like, 4X or 4.5 or even 5. So with that, I think that's probably a reason why I might not even have any Louisville, which seems odd, but, you know, like Nora, Enoch, or even Sutton could start out just hot, right? The first 10, 12 minutes, and all of a sudden they're up 15 to 18 because this SC Upstate team is not good at all, right? Like they're a horrendous shooting team, just looking at their numbers. So I don't know. I don't really know what to do, but Louisville's played in a bunch of blowouts already, so we can kind of see what they do, right? Like, and generally not anybody's going off, you know. Like, Nora had that against Miami. Enoch had, what, the 1 game. Perry's been all right in the blowouts, you know, but we can't play McMahon at 5,900. You know, Williamson's is talented, but it's not like he just has blown up either, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then if you add in Malik, you're like, who's that going to draw from? You know, pretty much everybody, right? Because even if he's going to play 12 to 14 minutes, he's still going to get minutes with the main guys, you know, to try to incorporate him back in with the normal guys that he's going to be seeing the floor with.
Yeah, and that, you know, we're in the same exact situation just, you know, last time when they were on the slate, the DK slate against Youngstown State, and even the game after that, where they have a high total. And it felt bad not having a piece, but at the same time, their prices they're so high that you can't really fit anyone and feel super confident in it. So I feel like the same thing is again, you know, like, yeah, you look at that high, you know, 87 points on KenPom, North Carolina 88, okay. I feel a hell of a lot better rostering North Carolina guys in the blowout than I do Louisville, because right off the bat, North Carolina's not quite as deep, and we've seen them, you know, their game style already and how they operate. So for me, I would much rather go that direction because I would more so pay for Cole Anthony over Nura in the blowout, just because I know that Cole's going to, you know, he's going to get close to that, and he's not going to be under 30, 35, where Nura might, he might have 15 in the first 5 minutes, and everybody's going to panic and say, oh, shit, why didn't I play Nura? And then the people that did are going to victory lap, and then all of a sudden it's going to be, you know, halftime, he finished with 20. Okay, wow, shit, he's going off. And then all of a sudden, you know, 10-minute mark of the second half, he's got 26. And then people are starting to panic that roster. And the people that faded are saying, then they're victory lapping. Same shit goes on every day, right? So for me, I don't think I'm going to have a ton of it. I will have some Kimball because I do think he's better than that. But with Malik back, it is worrisome because, you know, obviously it's going to make Williamson probably, you know, take a step back. You know, Enoch is going to take an obvious step back because he's going to lose rebounds. And then, you know, the only guy that I worry about fading is Sutton, but I also worry about rostering him. So it's one of those things where he's the one the only player on this team that I can't really figure out too well. And I do want, if Malik was now starting, I think I would just roll him. I wouldn't be too fearful of it. I don't want to be worried about guys coming back. I mean, until he started today, we were worried about it. He got 28. And obviously we're not going to, you know, that's not going to be the case with everybody. But if the team thinks he's good enough to start, then he's good enough to play. Now, if he comes off the bench, it's a little trickier. Now, SC Upstate, you mentioned they're a bad team. That they are. Their highest priced guy is 5'5 on DraftKings. That's Bryson Mozone. That there's absolutely no reason that you probably need to roster any of their guys. Tommy Bruner has the highest shot rate at 25%, and he's down there at 4K, but he's because he takes a lot of shots, but he puts up a lot of points. So, you know, typically the other day we had this game where Stetson was on the slate against Ohio State on FanDuel, and in my write-up I mentioned there's really no reason to go that direction, and there wasn't. And I think that will be saying the same here. So unless you have somebody about Upstate that you feel like, hey, they're going to make it, I'm going to move on because I don't think that we need to recommend anyone from there.
I mean, I don't know that I have anybody that's going to make it. The only guy that I'm going to consider using probably is Everett Hammond. He's just going to take double-digit shots. So at 5,200, taking a bunch of shots. You know, I think that's Virginia Tech they played. He went for 25.5 fantasy points. So, you know, we have that game to kind of go off. Where, you know, they're blown out, and he still played 34 minutes. So, but, yeah, this team's just really bad, to put it gently, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Next game. I'm excited to talk about this one. I was hoping that we might get an appearance from Johnny. I don't think he's going to make it tonight. But UNC versus Elon. Now, this is a huge blowout. KenPom has it 88-56 in favor of North Carolina. They have that 25th tempo ranking. They're a fast team. Elon 162nd. Now, why are we excited about this game? It's going to be a blowout, whatever, whatever. Well, old friend and Stanford alum Marcus Sheffield, and Johnny is aware that he's on the slate. He was text bombing me that he's been freed. That's all he's ever wanted, is Marcus Sheffield to be freed. Well, he's finally freed. He chose the Elon's mighty, mighty Phoenix to go to. He's got guard forward eligibility on DraftKings. I think I will, in honor of Johnny, have a GPP share of Mr. Sheffield. He's priced at 7.6. But, man, he is just doing whatever he wants. Against Michigan, he had 30 fantasy points. GT had 25. Marshall, which is obviously a good fantasy matchup for anyone, he had 40 fantasy points. In the game after that, he had 36. So he's been doing a whole hell of a lot for Elon. I think that, you know, being against North Carolina, obviously they're going to play fast. They're going to give up points. And Sheffield's got it. His efficiency rankings are outrageous. So he's got a 33% usage rate on this team and a 38% shot rate. So he has just got the green light to chuck, 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 chuck. And he has a 19% defensive rebounding rating. So he's been doing really well with rebounds, you know, getting steals, 3% steal rate, doing a little bit of everything. So I had to throw that out there that Sheffield is going to be in our some of my tournament lineups for sure. North Carolina side, do we pay for Cole Anthony? Do we not? He's 9.9K, so that's the highest we've seen this year. There was some question if the CBB pricing was going to be like CFB pricing, where, you know, Jalen Hurts was never priced above 9K, where in the year prior somebody like him would have been in the 10s. Well, that's been answered. Obviously, DraftKings pricing is different, but they are pricing studs appropriately. So Cole Anthony's not, you know, he started out at 7.6, which was easy, and even at 9.3, that was easy. And then 9.7 against Gardner Webb, I was still like, you know, let's plug him in. But now we're starting to get to territory where we really have to think on it. It's not just an auto plug, because now, you know, 40 fantasy points is just 4X. You know, we're going to probably want more. So we have to think, is he going to get more than 40? He's a lock for it. And, you know, sometimes you just want those raw points. With Zion last year, we didn't get 5X all the time. But it was nice having those 45 fantasy points pretty much as a guarantee and then building the rest of your lineup around it. You could take more risks. You could take shots on high upside guys because you knew for sure you were going to get no worse than 40 to 45 from that man. And that's probably the case with Cole Anthony. So we'll get to that in a second. You can tell me if you think you're going to lock him in. I obviously, you know, if there's enough value on the slate, I will still play him. But if I can get away with it, then I will too. I think Garrison Brooks at 7.7 is a touch out of our range now. I played him against Gardner Webb at 7.4, and I thought, you know, hey, he's popping 30s. He's finally over his foul issues. He's good to go. Of course, he picked up 2 fouls in that game against Gardner Webb and missed some of the first half, ended up playing through it in the second, which was fine. But he didn't really have to do a whole lot. You know, the game was close for a long time. The score doesn't do it justice. It was Cole Anthony getting free throws at the end. But it was a much closer game throughout. He only took 3 shots. He had 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 6 points. I am concerned that he, you know, I still think he might hit, like, you know, somewhere between 25 and 30. But the fact that he's almost 8K makes him less of an appealing option to me. You know, I'm going to Armando Beko, and I assume others will. And, you know, that might be considered a chase. At the same time, you know, he's clearly healthy. He came back against Gardner Webb, looked fine, 12 and 11. One block, didn't get into foul trouble or anything like that, and he looked just fine. So even with 20 to 25 minutes at this price, this pace, lots of shots, there's going to be rebounds for him. I think that, you know, he's a much better play than someone like Lamar Kimball at 4.8. So now as we're working through the slate, copping it out, we're finding value. Armando is definitely a guy that's going to be a core piece for me. You know, 3K difference between him and Brooks, and I think that we can reasonably expect Beko to be within 5, maybe at worst 10 points within Brooks. That's worth a 3K discount for me. Miki Black at 5.5 is somebody who I'm super interested in. He's, you know, at the first couple of games, I was like, okay, whatever. But now his price is 5.5. You know, he's roughly getting that 30, 35 minutes, contributing everywhere. He's not doing anything super exceptional, but 5, 6, and 4, you know, that's kind of his average on points, rebounds, and assists, right around 20 fantasy points. That's nice with upside for more. So I definitely like him. Christian Keeling at 4.5 is interesting. He has had some, you know, pretty bad games to start, but he showed what he did last year, you know, in the CAA more with that 30-minute game. He had 22 fantasy points, 9-4-2-2-1. Was getting into foul trouble, but I still think at 4.5 he's somebody you can consider for a cheaper price. And then you got Justin Pierce there at 6.6, who's fine. He saw 21 minutes last game at 21 fantasy points. Did show his upside from when he was at William & Mary. He had 41 fantasy points against UNCW. I have a buddy who's super into William & Mary, and they love Justin Pierce. And, you know, they're going with the Pierce is going to terrorize the former, you know, CAA opponent in Elon. So if you subscribe to that, and you want to play him, go for it. But I think, you know, Armando is the play. I think Leaky Black and Keeling are definitely in play. And with those guys, you know, cash-wise or main team-wise, as we call it, I think you can roll 2 or 3 North Carolina in the blowout and feel pretty damn good about it. They're not nearly as deep as Louisville is, so even though both games are a blowout, like I said, I would much rather go with the North Carolina guys. They're about 7 deep right now. The other guys, even, you know, are playing, you know, Walker Miller, KJ Smith, Brennan Huffman, like bench scrubs like that are not going to be cutting into their minutes. At worst, Justin Pierce sees 20 minutes. At worst, Andrew Platek sees 20 minutes. You know, Black, Anthony, Brooks, Keeling, they're all guys who are going to get, you know, 25 to 30, 35 minutes, even in the blowout. I think Roy is going to play his guys in the blowout. We will not see a Will Wade American Gangster-like situation right at the 13-minute mark, they all get pulled. I just don't see it. So with that being said, Cole Anthony, are you gonna be locking him in or not?
So I was prepared to say no, I would not be coming into starting this, but as we've gone through the first few games, I might just be locking him in to get the raw points and not worry about the value return. You know, because we talked through some of the higher priced guys from the first few games, and they just, to me, don't make a ton of sense. And I think Anthony makes sense. Now, if I can afford him and, you know, one of the guys from the next game together, then I'll do it. But I think he falls behind Tinkle for me on the slate. But, yeah, I mean, I had come into calling in to say that I was probably going to be off Anthony finally. But now that we look at it, I think the raw points are important.
Yeah, because he does pretty much everything. I mean, the last game against Gardner Webb, he didn't get the rebounding totals, but the two games prior to that, he had double-digit rebounding totals, and he's obviously got the green light to take whatever shot, and he can pull up with a guy in his face at any time. I mean, he is really special talent. Obviously, we need to enjoy him because he won't be back next year. You don't really need me to talk about, you know, what his rates are, but 40% shot rate, 35% usage rate, 20% defensive rebounding rate, 23% assist rate, 3.5 steals, draws 6.4 fouls per 40, you know, number one player on the KenPom Player of the Year rankings right now. I expect that to continue. I love him, man. I mean, I just, even at 10K, it's really hard to get away from him. He's a building block for your lineup. And like you said, I think we can, as I mentioned with Zion last year, you can almost get away from, I need 5X for tournaments. It's not always the case, especially if you can hit on one of your, maybe Armando at 4.7 hits 30 fantasy points tomorrow. Well, that's huge, right? 6X, a little bit more. So that's okay if Cole hits, 42 and he's right at 4X. That's okay, because those points are going to really set you up for maybe your sneak play doesn't hit, three. Maybe hits 3X. Well, you're okay because you got those raw points. So that's one of the main reasons we've done that. Now, if he goes above 10K next time and starts hitting this, 10-4, 10-5, there's going to be a conversation that we have to have, because then we're starting to get to a level where – if there's no value, you're really shooting yourself in the foot, because then you're trying to talk yourself into guys who, won two games ago, they got 30 minutes, but why is that? In the last two games, they've seen 10. You start this guessing game, and then your value guy gets 3 fantasy points. It's no worse feeling than that. Aside from that, why don't you give me your thoughts on the rest of the game with Sheffield and Armando and all those guys? Are you kind of the same opinion or different? Anyone I missed?
I'll be on Armando, but not as high as you are. I have to assume a lot of his, rebounding came with Brooks being in foul trouble and having those issues. I don't see foul trouble happening. Elon is one of the worst teams in the country in terms of even getting to the free throw line. They average, they're about 13.5% of their field goal attempts. One out of every, whatever that breaks down to be, one out of every seven, roughly. So they just don't draw a ton of fouls. So I don't think we have to think about foul trouble. For the most part, I'm kind of with you, the same thinking. I mean, Brooks could definitely dominate down low. Elon doesn't have a ton of size. I probably will use Sheffield a couple times just because of his gigantic usage rate. But the rest of that team just doesn't excite me all that much either. It's definitely an easier spot to target with North Carolina guys because they are going basically seven deep because they're dealing with a couple of injuries. Now, I don't know if for sure Brandon Robinson's been ruled out. I do see the last report was that he was walking without a boot, so I don't know the status of his ankle, and that looked like that was a week and a half ago. So we'll definitely want to make sure they're, because I think Black and Playtech are the two beneficiaries of him being out the most. But as of right now, I'm kind of proceeding like he isn't going to play, so that puts Black in play for me.
Yeah, and then, of course, it sounds like, you know, Sterling Manley will still be out, so that's what makes me still want to play Armando quite a bit, maybe a little Pierce. So, yeah, there's some injuries we need to take a look at, but definitely strong plays with the way they're priced, and we can still roll with Cole Anthony. All right, next game here, we got the Gauchos of Santa Barbara versus Oregon State. KenPom has it 75-63. Two slower teams, Oregon State 253 in tempo ranking, USC SB 327th. Now, obviously, Oregon State, you know, we're not going to get the cheap Ethan Thompson this time, it looks like, but Trace Tinkle, 9-7. That's your decision right there. Do you want to play Cole Anthony, or do you want to play Trace Tinkle in a game that maybe they don't score as many points as North Carolina is going to, and, you know, they're probably going to win. By the end of it, it'll probably be, you know, a wider margin. But I think for a while they're going to get hung with, and you know, the Gauchos are not going to get blown out, I don't believe, at least. Tinkle's a guy, you know, 28% shot rate, 26% usage rate, 30% combined rebounding rate, and a 28% assist rate. You know, he does a little bit of everything. Ethan Thompson's a guy who plays damn near 90% of the minutes. His price has kind of catapulted up, though, from where it was before. He's now 7'8". Last time he was on the slate, we got him for 6'4", in which he was a pretty big lock, so not nearly as big a lock now at 7'8", as a secondary option. Kyler Kelly at 7'4", it's, you know, I'm not really sure that I can use him there. Zach Reichel, in the past, on the old system, he would probably be like 4'4 right now, and a guy we're talking about, but at basically 6K. He doesn't do a lot for me. Probably gets the 20 fantasy points, but that's just not going to be enough, like you said, with the way the tournaments are right now. Even cash games, seeming with the way that this pricing is, you got to have, you know, in the past you could hit like 210 really and comfortably cash all double ups. You got to be more like almost 220 or above now, it seems. You're still going to cash some days with 200, but if you don't have like 220 now, it seems like you're just not getting there and like you did in the past. You know, you got speculative plays like Alfred Hollins, you know, Jared Lucas gets minutes. So it's just Oregon State for me, they're all just priced right. So I guess you can make that decision if you want to play Cole or Tinkle. I think if you're running multiple lineups, you just split them and get your exposure there. You know, for the Gauchos, pull up their stuff real quick. They're a team that they're not good on defense, so there's going to be a lot of points given up. They're actually pretty decent on offense, pretty efficient. Max Heidegger, he's got a 32% shot rate and 28% usage rate. Very good shooter as far as his true shooting efficiency. And then Amadou Sow, really challenging me with these names, 25% shot rate and a 27% usage rate. Also, a 37% combined rebounding rate and a very high true shooting percentage as well. Both of those guys draw over 5 fouls per 40. Obviously, both of those guys are the highest price on the team. 7'2 for Sow and 6'9 for Heidegger. Now, both guys are going to see 30-plus minutes. Heidegger takes a ton of shots, as I just mentioned. Doesn't necessarily do a lot else. He has had a game of 2 rebounds, 6 assists, but, you know, looking at his logs, you can figure out quite quickly that he's very scoring-dependent. So at 7K, I would prefer to have my guys, you know, contribute a little bit to other categories, and that's probably where you would want to just go 300 more if you're going to take a Gaucho and use Sow, who's got pretty much the same scoring, a little lower shot rate than Heidegger, but you can count on him to get rebounds and blocks and a couple other stats. He does average 15-9 right now for 28 fantasy points. So that would probably be the guy I would take if anyone. Now, I haven't tried to make a lineup yet, so construction-wise, I'm going to guess that this price range is going to be what makes or breaks us, as it has been, you know, lately. That getting that 7K to 7.5 guy right has been very, very, very crucial. They do have a guy back. Ja'Cory McLaughlin was a guy on the team last year. He was a lot more – his usage was higher last year. It doesn't look like – you know, he had that game of 30 earlier this season, but it doesn't look like he's been quite doing what he did last year, and I'm guessing because Sow and Heidegger have been taking all that away from him. So this game is one that I think we should definitely look at for tournaments, but I don't see a lot of main team guys that I love. I'm going to dig in more into Sow because, you know, he has got one of those mid-major guys that I would like to roster. And then for me, I'm still leaning Cole as my main guy for main teams and then Tinkle for my GPPs. What are you doing here with this game?
So I'm probably leaning Tinkle for my main teams because of what he can do. And just being 200 cheaper than Cole. But, you know, I don't know that I can play Ethan Thompson with the big price jump. I'm sure he'd be fine, but I just don't feel as comfortable doing it. I don't really like Kelly at that price. So I'm with you on the So and Heidegger. A couple other things that I noticed in this game. The three teams that the Gauchos have played aren't exactly all elite scorers or anything, but they're getting torched by three-point shooting. So for that reason, I'm going to have some interest in Reichel, even though I don't like having to pay $5,900 for him.
Mm-hmm.
But then from Santa Barbara, Freeman is a transfer from Oklahoma, who I have a little bit of interest in, and he's played pretty well the last couple of games. At $5,400, he's coming off a 37 fantasy point performance after putting up nearly 21 against UCLA. You know, so he comes from a major conference, so he has some ability. But you mentioned McLaughlin. One thing to point out is he's a transfer originally from Oregon State. So to me, there might be a little narrative here with him. And part of it is, as a freshman, he played quite a few minutes. And looking back at it, almost 85% of the minutes for Oregon State. Then he came back the next year and barely played and then either transferred or got hurt. I'd have to look it up for sure, but he really only played in six games. So I don't know if he left in season. And if he did, my guess is he kind of left a little upset. So there just might be a little something here for a narrative-wise from his end.
Yeah, that's a good call out. And you know, like I mentioned last year on Santa Barbara, it seemed like he was more involved, you know, and now this might be a spot where they want to, you know, defer to him more. So that's a good call out. And I remember Freeman popping up when there were some injuries to Oklahoma's front court, and he was the guy that was really cheap. So that's potentially nice tournament play, too. 5-4 is just okay. But I liked McLaughlin for tournament play there, too. And, yeah, you said you're leaning Tinkle over Anthony just because he's got 50-point upside, too, but maybe a little bit more other categories of scoring, right, besides just points?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a little more consistency with what he's able to do across the board, right? Like, I mean, Anthony is definitely going to get there as well. It's just I think Tinkle probably gets to 50 slightly more often. And he doesn't have to, I guess really also, he doesn't have to shoot ridiculously well from the field to get there. You know, where Anthony's going to have to take a ton of shots, right? Where Tinkle can get there by taking, you know, 15 or 16 shots, Anthony probably has to take 25. Is basically my thinking. Now, I obviously haven't tried to build anything to be sure, you know, where that 200 might not make a difference or position-wise too, right? Like, I haven't tried to put things together. You know, there are obviously some nights where I put things together and it's an automatic five-guard night and some nights where I just want five forwards. So it really depends on how those things come together as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The big thing with your lineup is if you have like clear cut group of guards that are cheaper that you want and you're struggling for forwards, then yeah, because there are slates where the forwards are awful and you take the highest priced guy because you want those points, and vice versa. Maybe the guards are bad. So yeah, it's really going to depend on your construction there. I don't think there's going to necessarily be a wrong answer as in like, you know, Cole puts up like 30 and it's like, oh my God, why didn't I put up Kinkle? I think they're going to be pretty close. And then the late hammer on DraftKings, we'll circle back around and talk about the two that are on FanDuel. But the late hammer on DraftKings, St. Mary's versus Fresno State. KenPom has St. Mary's winning 70-62, 336 in tempo ranking, Fresno 216th. St. Mary's is a little different than when we saw them last. Tommy Cousy is now, he's in the house. He's played the last couple of games. He hadn't played before, and Logan Johnson was a guy that we were talking a little bit about for using for value. Logan Johnson is basically dead now. So Tommy Cousy is now playing and getting, I believe, his consistent more minutes again. So you can't really use any of these value guys on St. Mary's just because of how those rotations goes. It still really leaned heavily towards Jordan Ford, who's priced at 8-2. He's going to get ignored on this slate, as he often does, because most people are going to go up to that 9K range and take a guy, or they're going to be down in those 5 to 6K range. So Ford's a really strong tournament play, knowing that he's going to be leveraged, knowing that he's not going to have a ton of ownership. I don't necessarily think he's an outstanding play for any reason other than tournament strategy. Now, Malik Fitz at 6-4 is somebody that I'm pretty interested in. Game log chasers are going to look and see a 17, and 18, and 24 and say, oh, hell no. But he has capability of going 40-plus, so I definitely like him there at 6-4. Fresno State's not necessarily the best team to target because their defense is pretty decent. They held their own against Oregon pretty well. The box score shows them losing 71-57, but the game wasn't that bad. They beat Winthrop, a tough Winthrop team by three, lost to San Diego in overtime, and obviously against non-D1, they blew them out. So Fresno State's a good team. I think this is going to be a pretty big war. This is on a neutral court. It's not a home game for Fresno State or anything. Fitz and Ford are obviously the two guys that they derive so much usage on this team that it makes it hard to really pay for anyone else. A guy like Mateus Batas is somebody capable of hitting 30, but he's just so inconsistent that I don't know that I can really get a lot of exposure to him. And then with Cousy now playing regular minutes again, and Krebs and Johnson and guys like that, that situation doesn't really make me feel that confident either. For Fresno State, Nate Grimes is 7-1. He's always a guy that is, easily in play. He only played 10 minutes that last game, but they blew out the non-D1. He was in foul trouble. They didn't really need him. You don't need him to getting hurt in a game like that. So I was kind of throw that out and look to his other games where he played, 33, 34, 23 fantasy points, 36, 30. He's really the guy that's going to be banging with Fitz. Noah Blackwell at 5K is somebody I'm looking at this now that I'm kind of, interested in. That price for him is a little cheap. I think he's better than what he showed. So Blackwell's a guy. New Williams at 4-6 was a guy that I thought was going to be a lot better, but his minutes have been all over the place, so we really can't use him. It would not surprise me to see him hit a big game because he has that capability, but he just doesn't be getting the minutes. And then Aguirre Ago at 5-4, he's the other guy, again, 18 to 20 minutes. So there's a lot of guys for Fresno that are just playing these minutes kind of all over the board, and I don't feel super confident in any of them. I know that Nate Grimes and Noah Blackwell are the two that if I was going to play someone, I would play them. But St. Mary's, games, we've seen them on the slate a couple times. They've just been played really slow. They're kind of gritty, and there's not a ton of fantasy goodness. Usually the Ford fit side does, and maybe one guy on the other end. And then also Fresno State may be without the guy that here 7.9, Jared Heider. So that's something that we'll have to take a look at too, because if he's out, I definitely think that Blackwell and maybe New Williams get more usage. But this game, for being a hammer, I have this weird thing that I always feel like I need to have a part of the hammer. I don't want to be caught without it. Sometimes it's just not the game. What are you doing with this one, man? Are you going to get caught without any hammer play on your main, or do you feel like you're going to get some of it?
I really have no idea. For Fresno State, I have to dig in more a little bit because this Jared Heider kind of came out of nowhere.
Yep.
He was min priced against Oregon, played 29 minutes, which I'm pretty sure at that time was because Blackwell was suspended for the first two games, I think it was. Let me look. Just the first game for something. So I thought, he probably just slid in and started for him. Didn't do anything. It took 7 shots but finished with 5 fantasy points. Then all of a sudden in a close win, he puts up 40 fantasy points. And then again in the overtime game, he goes for 39 fantasy points. He's just not somebody that I recognize at all, so I'll have to look into more and obviously figure out if he's playing. You know, Nate Grimes is supposed to be solid, but I know he kind of dealt with foul trouble in the last game, and obviously a blowout, so he only played 10 minutes. So his price probably has come down. It has come down since the game against Oregon, so that kind of brings him in play. But I'm kind of intrigued by this Orlando Robinson, the numbers he's put up the last two games at 5,300, just because he kind of has the size to deal with Tyus down low, right, Matthias. They're both, what, 6'10", around 240? Yeah, I mean, pretty much. So, you know, he's going to be needed down low, and he's been playing, you know, a bunch of minutes the last couple games and starting. So, I mean, I just don't know. Like, this, you know, I spent so much time looking into Fresno State to start the season because they were on that slate with against Oregon in a bigger game. And now it's just a couple of names that I just don't remember from that, from research at that time. So now I have to kind of go through, you know, like this Lawrence as well, putting up a bunch of shots. He's been over 20 fantasy points in 3 out of 4 games. So I don't know. It's a lot to figure out, and I just don't like targeting St. Mary's at all either. You know, this game could be a lot slower paced, so I think right now I'm probably avoiding, other than I'm probably going to have a share or two of Blackwell because of that price, and I know, you know, what he's capable of, you know, as long as he's getting the minutes.
Yeah, and exactly, and he missed, what, the first game or two because of suspension, I believe, but they have, like, really 8 new players that are getting minutes for them, and that's, I don't think even their coach really knows you know, where they're going to go with their rotation yet. Like you said, Hyder kind of jumped out of nowhere, but they're still trying to figure out probably, you know, everybody's role. And that makes me nervous as a DFS standpoint, because I don't want to have undefined roles. I want to have as close to, like, the Michigan situation as possible, where there's 7 guys and we know, you know, what each guy does. And we don't always get that luxury because that would make it too easy. A part of the fun is figuring it out. But, yeah, it'd be different, I think. If Fresno State was the team playing like St. John's, I think I would be a hell of a lot more motivated to figure it out than I really am right now against St. Mary's. But, yeah, I'll definitely be digging into it more. But on the DraftKings slate, it really looks like to me getting North Carolina exposure, that St. John's Columbia game, you know, maybe some Tinkle and Gauchos, but – I don't really see a ton else with the blowout in Louisville. I feel like Georgia Tech is going to be like that slate-breaking game that goes to overtime, so I'm going to have to reevaluate there. But it's kind of what I'm feeling there. Let's talk about the two games on FanDuel for our FanDuel folks. There's Memphis versus Little Rock. KenPom has it 82-66. Memphis, 8th fastest team in the country. Little Rock, 248. You know, obviously they don't have James Wiseman. That shouldn't be an issue for them. It's just kind of be the next man up. This is, you know, Penny went through and got that class that everybody was going ham for. And, you know, oh, my God, he got all these guys. This is crazy. How's this going to work out? Now, the prices for the Memphis guys are they looked kind of nice, really. I know that 6'2 for DJ Jeffries normally would be probably a fade, but without Wiseman, Jeffries is looking kind of nice there. Lester, you know, Mr. Tiny Shorts himself, Lester Quinones at 6K, is okay, but Precious Achiuwa at 5'9", I think he could have a big game at that price. Boogie Ellis at 5'8", I don't get necessarily as excited about him, but Damian Bow at 5'4", I like. He's been contributing in all categories. You know, old friend Tyler Harris at 3'9", ordinarily that'd be exciting, but he's, you know, as expected with all these new recruits, he wasn't really going to be as big a factor. But, yeah, I think Jeffries, Precious, and Quinones are all in play, even though they're, you know, right at that price without Wiseman. For me, Little Rock, I don't know, admittedly, a ton about them. But I mean, they're going to get absolutely beat down by Memphis, I would suspect. The game against Alcorn State, you know, without Wiseman, and obviously Alcorn State's much lower tier competition for them. Jeffries didn't start, Lance Thomas did, but Lance Thomas played just 11 minutes. Jeffries, 24 minutes off the bench, 15, 4, 3, and 3 steals. Precious had 28 and a block and a steal with an assist, and then Lester Quinones had 21 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists. And Damian Bow, you know, he's not much of a scorer really, but he had 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal, and he's been pretty consistently contributing in other categories. So I like Memphis here. You know, FanDuel is a much smaller slate. You're dealing with Georgia, Georgia Tech, Indiana, you know, and Princeton, and then I think Memphis is really, you want to mini-stack them, because the game after that is Letdown City, Texas A&M versus Troy. So I can tell you guys real quick with Little Rock in terms of their usage and efficiency. I haven't had a chance to watch them. I've been trying to, with my ESPN Plus that I have now, watch a lot of these highlights they have and recaps and reviews and all this stuff. Haven't got a chance to look at them. Marquise Noel, 30% shot rate, 27% usage rate, and a 34% assist rate. Obviously, their top dog, the highest priced. Ben Cuvette has played 91.7% of the minutes. Ruat Mengyang has a 27% combined rebounding rate, 3% block rate. And that is pretty much the three guys that look like the most, appealing.
Yeah.
Noel at 7'5", expectedly, Coupette's 5'9", and Mengyang 6K.
So the big end of those more, but I think the Memphis guy's certainly in play. What's your initial reaction to this game?
It's going to come down to finding the right mix of Memphis guys, and it's probably going to take three of them in your builds, is my guess. Just kind of looking at this plate and obviously their prices. Jeffries and Quinones for sure. Achua probably. But the one one thing for Little Rock is the fact that they do have two guys at center that are 6'10 and 7 feet. So they're not missing size to deal down low. They obviously aren't super talented, right? Because they are big guys that are just at Little Rock, but they're at least some size. If I feel like I need value, I might grab a share of Isaiah Maurice down at 3,600. If we think it's going to be not a close game or whatever, he did play 13 minutes against Elkhorn and go for almost 18 fantasy points. So, there's extra minutes because of no Wiseman from the forward position. So he's somebody that might work for, a value dart play. But there's somebody at 3,800 in the next game that I would prefer over him.
Let's jump over to that. Troy versus Texas A&M. KenPom has a 79-61 for Texas A&M. Troy 74th in tempo. Texas A&M 264th. Feels like both of these teams have been on slates a lot lately. We're getting to know Zay Williams pretty well. We know he's the Troy stud at this point. High usage guy averaging over 30 fantasy points. You want to pay up for somebody. He's been really good. I actually think I've watched two of their games now on my computer, and I think that he could actually compete in some of these higher conferences. He's really good. Obviously for A&M, Savion Flagg's 5'7". Oh, God, that's asking for trouble. Nebo 5'7 there. Obviously for A&M, we know Andre Gordon's gotten minutes. He's down there at 4'6". Jonathan Aku is 4K. Wendell Mitchell is 3'8". Oh boy. I'm really glad this game's not on DK where most of my action is, because I just can't handle having to play a lot of money on Wendell Mitchell. Clearly at 3'8", you're going to play Wendell Mitchell. I think it's pretty silly not to. TJ Starks is not going to play. He's out for the foreseeable future. Against Gonzaga, of all teams, he had a really respectable 14-3-2 game with 2 steals, 21.6. Against Louisiana Monroe, he had that -1 in the game before that, 12 points. So there's a very wide range outcome for Wendell Mitchell. He literally has a negative floor, but he has a ceiling even higher than the 21.6 he showed against Gonzaga. So even though it's scary, he's going to be mega chopped there. So you can roll him out and know that he's going to be high enough on that. If you bust, it shouldn't kill you too hard. I think I would probably be tempted to go back down the Savion Flagg, thing too, because he's had 8-11 the last two games. He's obviously much better. We saw it in the first game where he had 43. He's just you know, he's struggling, and this happens to players. I have him in Dynasty, so obviously I'm hoping and praying that he's going to turn it around. Because I was super high on him going into the season, and I'm not ready to panic yet. If he doesn't do well here, I may start to panic, but I think at 5-7, the upside for him is relatively juicy. It seems like on the FanDuel slates, we're getting not a lot of studs to pay up for. So we're going to have a lot of salary left over. But, you know, Flagg, Nebo, Wendell Mitchell. I really like Zay Williams. 7-3 is a lot to pay for him, but A&M hasn't really done much to stop the opposing team's studs. Well, you know, what's the deal with this? I'm assuming Wendell Mitchell is the guy you're talking about, but what are you feeling on this one?
Mitchell is definitely the guy I'm talking about. I can't ignore what his upside is. When I guess things are right, I don't really know what's wrong. But he still played 32 minutes against Gonzaga, so. You know, even if he only goes for the 12 that he went for against Northwestern State, it's still not going to kill you at 3,800. You know, the big thing is I don't know that we really need the value. I mean, we didn't really look at the prices for the first two games since we already covered them. So maybe that's where the spend-ups are, and it probably is, especially with that Georgia Tech-Georgia game. But there's just, I mean, all of Texas A&M is too cheap for me, based on what they can do, not what they've, you know, consistently done. So I'm probably going to be going back to Flagg, just because he's shown the upside, especially against, you know, not good teams. So I don't know. I didn't watch the Gonzaga game, so I can't comment on how that went. But I remember watching the Louisiana Monroe game and just wondering, you know, if he really even cared to be out there. But yeah, and I'm definitely on Zay Williams just because he's shown me enough so far. And I think you can take any of the three Troy guards, Darian Adams, Ty Gordon, or KJ Simon, because I think any of those three could do something for it. But yeah, I don't know. I may end up not playing on FanDuel much just because I don't really like the four games that they chose to put on their slate.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, the 5-5-5 actually has a somewhat decent prize pool this time, which is ironic. But, yeah, it's not a great slate. I think everybody's going to have the same basic build. I think with the pricing the way it is, because the top three pay-ups are Banks, Hammonds, and Edwards, which – are okay. I mean, they're good, better than okay plays, but I think I would rather pay for Zay Williams, who I know is going to get usage. And then looking more into Little Rock, as you were talking, Marquise Noel, he is playing every single minute of every game, and he's had 26, 40, and 51 the last three. 25, 8, and 7, 28, 2, and 4, 12, 2, and 8. And he's had four steals in two of three games. So against Memphis, who, you know, we expected to be a really defensive juggernaut, they're still kind of meshing, and now you take Wiseman out of the equation. Their defense isn't really on par with where it should be, and I think a guy that's playing every single minute, I'm gonna probably be in on. So it kind of seems like a silly build, but the pay-ups being, you know, a guy from Little Rock and a guy from Troy, and then all these cheap guys from Texas A&M. It's a very bizarre world. But yeah, I don't think I'll be playing a ton on there either, because I mean 8K 7-9 for Banks is okay, but. You know, if this was a normal size slate, I probably wouldn't be paying that for him on FanDuel. But that's just me. What else, man? Is there anything else you want to comment on? Have you been doing anything else? You been betting at all, or you know, how's Dynasty going for you? Let's chat a little bit before we get out of here.
I mean, I haven't really been betting or anything, but I guess Dynasty started out all right. Picked up two wins the first week of the season and was one of the higher scoring teams, even though it's supposed to be a rebuilding year for me. I did think I had lost twice last week, so that's a little frustrating, but I mean, I'm still, I don't know, up there in points. I know you picked up your first win in the Dynasty League. But yeah, I don't know. I'm annoyed by these, you know, last minute waivers, because now I have to make adjustments, and we still could end up seeing Joey Hauser somehow become eligible. So I don't really know what to do. I'm supposed to be rebuilding, but I'm having guys putting up strong performances. I just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you're running well. Those who don't know, I kind of dumped off Matt Coleman. He didn't even want him in a trade, and now Matt Coleman's performing like, you know, conference player of the year, and I'm annoyed by that. And I've stuck with Paris Austin, who's now regressed to a middle school player. But yeah, no, you're doing well on that. I've been getting a lot of requests for, you know, because I've been talking about it, and people are wondering. But I think that I'm going to try to – I want to maybe start a dynasty league for the show and everything, but I don't want to be the one to run it. So if there's somebody, if we can, we'll get that together, you know, by the end of this season and maybe get people in and, you know, it'll be a pay league. So it's competitive and all that. But I certainly don't have time to be the one. Like Corey puts in so much time in that league. There's no way in hell I could possibly have the time to do what he does. I'm very thankful for him. So I certainly want to start a league. I think if you have time, maybe we could start it and somebody could run it, you know, be the commish for us. I think that's, we're going to go down that road and do some other fun stuff, but that's certainly what I want to do. I did have a bet today. I took, Pepperdine, they were plus 11.5 on William Hill today, which seemed way too high. USC looked good today. Holy hell, I was kind of like, yeah, no, they're good, but they're not that good. They looked really good. Granted, Pepperdine doesn't play a lot of defense, and that game is going to be fast-paced. But if USC is going to have Rack and Double O playing off each other like that and assisting each other's baskets, that's going to be hard for any team in the Pac-12 to stop. Like I was watching some of that today on ESPN Plus, and I was just in awe of what I was watching. They're way better than last year. You know, their coach is not really good, but he's just pulling some massively good recruits, and they have the right pieces for sure. And Colby Ross is just that guy's a fucking maniac. But anyways, I took Pepperdine plus 11.5. That obviously worked out for me, and then I took parlayed it with San Francisco money line. And that worked out. They blew out their opponent, Bakersfield, I believe. So I'm still doing a little bit of betting. I'm trying to get my feet under me and get a consistent process before I really recommend betting plays, because obviously, you know, I was super high on that Texas A&M play, and they didn't cover without Doolittle on Oklahoma. So I don't want to be telling people to bet stuff if it's not going to work. So I've been kind of messing around with that before I consistently do that. Johnny is somebody who, we'll have on to talk about betting stuff too. But another slate in the books and another one done. We're going to start doing more shows more often. Eric did mention to me about, I'm guessing because people are talking to him about getting more shows. I also have been getting people asking me about it. It's been a kind of a busy time. As we kind of settle in and get past Thanksgiving, I'll definitely start moving towards, more frequently. Even starting next week, we'll probably do another one, depending on what the size of the slate is. If the slates are going to be over 5 games going forward, I'll definitely be doing shows. But on the ones that are like 3 to 5 games, it's kind of tough to do a show that's more than, 30 minutes and it's value added without just basically giving away our whole lineup. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at now. I appreciate you coming on, Eric, as always. You're crushing it so far this year, and I hope you continue to, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Sounds good. Have a good night.
All right, thanks everybody who listened. I appreciate it as always. Starting Thursday is going to be some of those tournaments that are happening, like the down in Puerto Rico and all the different tournaments of that. So there'll be some morning slates, split slates, morning and afternoon, and games early all day basketball, which is extremely exciting for me and I'm sure every one of you. So we will be pumping out shows for those types of slates as well. Like I said, it just has to be value added to where Eric and I aren't literally handing you our lineups on a platter. On a 4-game slate, if you're smart, which most of you are, you'll figure out who we're on and what our lineups are. I mean, hell, even with my content, a lot of people are landing on my main optimal build and double ups, I'm noticing, and I don't want to be one of those people that gets made fun of for having the same lineup as seven other people. You know who you are, Rob. I don't want to get called out by my friend Rob, you know what I'm saying? So that's where we're at with it. But I appreciate all the support. Everybody has been very, very good this year as we're adjusting the pricing. Also, if anybody wants to be a producer or has a ability to produce shows and wants the show to be on another platform, you should definitely reach out to me or Eric. We'd be happy to talk with you and possibly, work out some form of compensation. Because if we can get somebody to post the show for us and move on to these other platforms and help produce the show, then we'll be more than happy to churn them out daily. But thanks again. Appreciate it. Good luck to everybody. I think we've broken it down pretty well for you. And keep in mind that the slates will get bigger. The other question I've been getting is that, the slates aren't great. Price pools aren't great. We're still in football season, folks. So with college football has, two games left of regular season before bowls, two, and then conference championships or whatever. So there's a couple more weeks of college football before we start getting the Saturday full day of hoops with big prize pools. So hang in there, guys. Keep grinding and beating up on each other for just a little bit longer. Pretty soon that football money will come. See you.
Yeah. DA got that dope.